Dobrý den, vážení televizní diváci. Máme dnes v rozhovoru Britských listů pana Muhameda Durakoviče a chtěli bychom s ním pohovořit v souvislosti s dnešní krizí kolem koronaviru, protože on má zážitek z těch jugoslávských válek z 90. let o tom, jak zvládat strach. Mr. Durakovič, I want to ask you, you experienced the war in Yugoslavia in the 90s, and obviously you have had experience with fear. Can you first tell us briefly what provoked fear? What experiences provoked fear in you?
I think everybody has somewhat different experience when it comes to fear. We are all individuals and we all deal with this very strong and potent emotion in a different way. Basically, the fear that I felt during the wartime is it's a fear for you know, biological survival, fear of losing a life or limb, fear of losing family members.
What so, provoked it?
Well, the as you know, in the beginning of 1992, my little town where I grew up, called Srebrenica, was overrun by Serb paramilitary units, and that's when the executions, which led to ethnic cleansing and later on to genocide in Bosnia and Herzegovina, took place. So basically, I was a high school kid going to high school on a regular basis, and then one day we were faced with these armed groups of people who drove into the town and started shooting up the place. So it basically began overnight, and without, at least for me at that time, without any notice. So everybody became very terrified of what their prospects in the future will bring, but nobody, even in their worst nightmare, could imagine what would happen 3.5 years down the road.
It is, in a way, it was a war situation, but in a way we are also in a war situation these days, and also we are in a a situation where the situation is quite uncontrollable. And many people are seized by fear because, of course, nobody knows. I know that this pandemic affects mostly older people, but nevertheless, even young people have died. So kind of we have all now been much more aware of our mortality and the realization that actually it may be that we will not see another day. So can you say how... What methods did you actually develop coping with this fear? Because obviously both your family and yourself were suddenly overnight threatened by the possibility of being killed.
It has been a really long time ago, but I do remember very much searching for some sort of refuge in our community. And I think that's one of the first things that happen to people when they are faced with this kind of threat. Either it could be a war, or it could be some sort of pandemic. People turn to each other, they turn to their community, they turn to their family members, and they try to find some sort of comfort in that kind of situation. What is really happening on some sort of psychological level is people go through some sort of tremendous change. It's almost like evolution takes a few steps back, and people start processing information in a very different manner, which could be a basic survival instinct, but also it could lead to some really poor decisions, which happens in every war. And I think that's what my experience from that time is to be completely surprised by the sort of change in personality of certain individuals. Someone that you thought it's an ordinary person turns out to be a completely complete wreck, somebody who broke down mentally, couldn't deal with it, and someone who was just an ordinary man or woman turned out to be a person of great courage. So I think we all deal on some sort of personal level with that kind of fear. And one thing that definitely this kind of situation provokes is this feeling of complete losing control over your life. Mm. And I think many people's reactions during this time is trying to find some sort of answers in some sort of divinity. So you could see a lot of people who were, I grew up in some sort of socialist country where religion was not very much encouraged, and people were not encouraged to practice religion. You could see a lot of people trying to find comfort in their faith.
Uh-huh. So so you would have actually said originally that the spirit of community is something that helps very much, you think, that people in reaction to that danger started joining together or helping each other? Was that one of the most important things?
Yes, I think on the individualistic level, when I was a student after the war, and when I was studying all these kind of, Maslow pyramids of needs, I found it very, very troubling for me, because in that kind of theory, you're always talking about your physical, the needs being firstly satisfied, need for food and water and everything else. But basically, my experience is quite different. I think I would switch things around, meaning that, the second step, which is your safety and security, I think in reality is the first step. So the first thing that people are always looking for in life is their own personal safety and security. And then if that is provided, then they're looking for safety and security of their own community. And then the following step, it would be everything else. You're satisfying your physical, basically needs. So you see that, in the communities, in really difficult times, people will reach out to each other, provide some sort of comfort in that kind of community setting, and try to help each other and protect each other. It's because by protecting each other as a group, they're actually also protecting themselves individually.
That is interesting, but of course, in the current situation, it's very difficult, because how can an individual protect himself or his family or his old parents or whatever, unless, of course, you keep them in absolute quarantine, in absolute separation, which especially in families where that may live together with their old people, may be very difficult. So, but it is interesting that you're saying that you first have to have your own personal feeling of security before you can start reaching out and talking to other people. So how did you in the early 90s? How did you actually manage to? What did you do to secure your own security or the security of your family before you started reaching out?
Well, my personal story is quite I wouldn't say unique, but it's a story of almost every family from Eastern Bosnia. My home and my house and everything else that we've had and we have kind of collected throughout the life, memories and everything that you needed, was destroyed within like 1 or 2 days. Literally, my father's and my mother's property was gone. After surviving that first wave of violence, when we have managed to return to our house, we found nothing there. So our first basic task was to try to find at least something that we can use to provide some sort of shelter for each other, and then place to where we could continue living, because life goes on. And then of course following that you search for everything else that you need in life, your food, your clothing, your any sort of need that you may have. So it's quite different, the experience that I've had in 1992 from what's happening today. But I think on some sort of psychological level, it's quite similar. I think you as an individual, you need to find out what exactly you need to do in order to keep yourself safe. And do the things, and then from that move on and develop strategy how you can that provide safety and security for your children, your parents, and then later on extend that kind of sort of support to your whole community. We are flock animals. We live in packs. We live together. So basically, survival of the community is, I think, the only thing that we find more important than survival of an individual. And this is why you would see very often in this kind of tragic moments, it doesn't matter if it's a natural disaster or war or some sort of pandemic, that there are some people who are ready to take extraordinary steps, even go as far as sacrificing their own life in order to sacrifice the lives of the community. I mean, it can be a nuclear disaster. It could be, we have, evidence from the history, all different kinds of behavior. People change their behavior in order to provide safety and security for their community.
Can we go back a little bit to your personal experience? I know that it's a long time, but I mean, obviously, you spoke at the beginning about the fact that it kind of happened overnight, and suddenly you were faced with this absolute danger that actually your family or yourself could be killed. Individually, if you can remember, can you say how you coped, or how what kind of methods, because this may be very important for people now, what methods you use to actually allay fear, to put down fear, to free yourself of fear, even though the situation was very difficult?
I think one of the things that happened to me was that I was really able, and that's one of the reasons why I think I survived surveillance, is I was able to assess the situation and be very realistic about it, to not have, unfortunately to say, not have too much hope. Because too much hope was not a good thing at that time.
So you think that if people actually say, well, okay, so we may die tomorrow, so what? So if you face this danger, that you free yourself of fear.
Unfortunately, we're all dying. I mean, that's what helped me sort of manage my life even today when it comes to any sort of desire that I have. In terms of accomplishing some of my goals in life. And even if I fail in accomplishing those goals, I don't make a big deal out of it. Simply because I think we are all in the process of decaying and expiring. And, it's kind of, I have two sisters who are medical workers, and they don't think it's a very healthy attitude towards life. But I mean, I am very realistic about it. I think about death very often. I think it's a part of my post-traumatic stress disorder kind of dealing situation with, that most Bosnians are actually suffering from, but they're not diagnosed or being treated. But I think thinking about death often and just taking it as a fact of life really helped me. So I wouldn't panic or lose my head over the things that I was losing my friends left and right. I went to school, and out of 24 members of my class, only three of us survived. So the survival rate was very low. So basically, I just took that as a fact of life. That's what is going to help you fight through that kind of situation. You know, those basic sort of instincts that you have when you're faced with a difficulty. It's fight, freeze, or flight. Basically, if you're fighting with it, or you're completely incapable of doing anything about it, you freeze or you run, try to run away from the situation. I think that kind of attitude helped me put it in some sort of perspective. Okay, how can I get the best out of what I'm right now? And I think that that's a very sort of healthy attitude for people even today. You know, if they are faced with some sort of difficulties, if they are faced with a fear, to see what is the best I can do for whatever time I have left, you know, before I will be gone anyways. I mean, we should not kid ourselves. None of us are going to live forever. Someone is going to die today. Somebody is going to die 10 years from today. But eventually, everybody is going to die. So I think, I don't know if it's going to be very helpful for your viewers, but basically, you know, being realistic about life and life's expectations is something that helped me.
This is kind of very existentialist in the sense that when we are actually aware of our mortality and we come to terms with the fact that we will actually die sooner or later, or maybe tomorrow, that we may actually feel better. Mr. Durakovic, thank you very much for your very, very interesting, well, direct experience from when you were endangered. Thank you very much and goodbye. Vážení televizní diváci, děkujeme vám za pozornost. Naschledanou.